Thank you for joining us for live paranormal radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show host and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
It's Haunted Playground, right here on the Live Paranormal Radio Network. I'm your host, Sheena Metal. I'm a psychic medium. I'm an interfaith minister. I'm a 27-year talk radio host here in Los Angeles, and this is Haunted Playground. We're at hauntedplayground.com and, of course, the network at liveparanormal.com and syndicated all around the world, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Podomatic, Blog Talk Radio. There are so many more. I never can remember them all. We are all over the world. Check us out there. Honored to be a part of the Live Paranormal family. Honored to be a part of the iHeartRadio family. And so excited to be here syndicated doing this show for you all. Haunted Playground is 11 years old this year. We brought it here after the quarantine, the pandemic, the COVID changed everything in all of our lives. I got offered this last summer. We brought it here at the beginning of the year. I do two shows here for the Live Paranormal Radio Network, Haunted Playground on Wednesdays at 6 o'clock Pacific Time and Raising the Vibration on Tuesdays at 5 o'clock Pacific Time. I'm bringing a new show over probably in the fall, and I do three shows at 9 o'clock Pacific Time on Live Paranormal's video network, which is at facebook.com/TheLiveParanormal. Tonight, I'll be doing the companion to this show. It's called Haunted Playground After Dark. All of your spiritual paranormal questions will be answered. I do free psychic readings. I give some spiritual advice. We have a lot of fun, and we're there every week. Please check it out. SheenaMetalSpiritual.com, that's where you find me. That's my website. You can find out almost everything about me. Like everything, it's a work in progress. It grows and it grows and it grows. Honored today on the show. Every week I try to gather the brightest, smartest, most beautiful minds and hearts and souls in both the spiritual and the paranormal community. And certainly this group of folks is no exception. I've known Brad and Barry Kling for so long that I feel like I am part of their paranormal investigation team. They joined me today with the third prong of that team, Katie Burr. I'm so thrilled to have them all here and excited to have my buddies from Dallas back. Since the last time I had the Klings on the show, Dallas has become kind of a second home for me. I go there a couple of times a year and teach, and I love the city, and I love being there. I love doing workshops there. And I'm so thrilled to have these folks back on the show. You remember them on Discovery Channel. Their show was Ghost Lab, and they're some of the best in the business, and I'm honored to have you. Welcome, Brad. Welcome, Barry. Welcome, Katie. It's so wonderful to have you all here.
Howdy.
Thank you.
Hey, Tina.
Katie, can you? Hi, how are you? Nice to hear you. Nice to see you and hear you all in my head. See you in my mind's eye. So tell me, Barry, what has it been like for you all the last couple year and a half during COVID? It's hard to do paranormal investigation when everything's closed. So what do folks who have a passion to pursue the paranormal do when the world shuts down?
Well, you know, it was hard. You know, we couldn't get out to places. Events were kind of shut down. Which are the things that we like to do. We like to do events. We like to get out and about, meet people. So we actually started a podcast. It was called Death, Texas, and Tacos. It was just kind of something to kind of suffice our time and to kind of stay relevant in the paranormal. We did several shows of that. And we've just been doing research, planning future projects. We've been talking to Katie, you know, over the last several months, and kind of getting the band back together, if you want to call it that. So we've just been plotting and scheming of, you know, world domination over the last year and a half, and so here we are. And we're back.
Nice.
We're back to doing events. We're back to
nice.
Back to sort of normal, I guess. So we're back at it.
Now, are you back out investigating places? Is everything where you are in Texas sort of open and ready to go?
Well, Texas, as you've probably seen in the news, we're probably one of the most open states that there has been. So,
you know, we have been able to get into a few places. You know, because mind you, if you think about it, it's COVID. If it's just a small group and the place is closed anyway, it's kind of, you know, what's the big deal? It's just like being in your house, but you're, you know, at a certain location. Here's the deal. Hauntings don't stop because of COVID. And, you know, this stuff, you know, people contact us all the time, you know, hey, I'm having this issue. Hey, you know, something weird's going on. We get contacted from all, you know, all around the world. Obviously, we can't drop what we're going and go to Budapest to, you know, investigate someone. But if they call from here in the great state of Texas and it's close enough, you know, we're gonna see what we can do to get there. And we've done a few, and we're going to be doing quite a few more in the next few months. And you should, you know, we'll be talking about that on our website and, you know, kind of what we're doing. And you know, you can follow us to see where we're going and what we're doing, what we're up to.
Awesome. Thank you, my friend. Brad, I have a theory. I have a theory that ghosts like quarantines because I think that the less trampled by human activity a place is, oftentimes the more haunted it is. Because I think human beings kind of sometimes chase the ghosts back into the ether, so to speak, with their bizarre energy.
Well, you know, it's kind of like paranormal activity manifests with energy, so it takes energy to manifest energy, right? And I think that with a lot of people in places, it does help manifest it, but you don't notice it because there's so much noise, there's so many people, there's so many other things going on that you don't notice things that are out of the ordinary. So in a way, you're right. The fact that, you know, these things are still there and, you know, just becoming supercharged. And let's say if they're intelligent and they're trying to communicate, and there's nothing to communicate with, and you go back into one of these places, this place might light up like a Christmas tree as far as the activity goes. You know,
yeah.
We shall see as we start getting back into these locations.
Yeah, I think especially with a lot of the paranormal teams that did television stuff, right? When those teams first got there, the places were like a hot place. But then after every team had been through and there's an event there every single weekend and there's a tour every hour. Because I don't think spirits, some yes, but I think a lot of spirits don't really want a lot to do with us. They kind of want to do their own thing, and I think we just kind of muck up their show. Does that make sense? Katie,
right.
How do you feel about that?
Yeah, you know, people are actually, that is true, but I also think people are kind of desensitized to paranormal investigating. And now it's kind of like they want to come in, they want to get a quick fix and get out. They're not taking the time or the research or the evidence review to really find these things that they're out there looking for. And I just think it's kind of turned into a kind of a wham, bam, thank you, man kind of mentality where you're just, you know, you're not really into it. It's kind of a thrill-seeking type thing, and you're not paying attention to what's going on. Like Brad said, you know, you're just it's flying over your head and you don't even know it. I think that's part of the
problem.
Right,
they want to come in, they want to see a demon, they want to kick its ass, and they want to go home.
Yeah, all in 20 minutes.
Exactly.
You know, unfortunately,
the time of the tour runs out.
Yeah.
I think it kind of depends on where you're at, too, because, I mean, we've, you know, been in places where it seems like the more people that are there, like, the less is going on, and, you know, when you kind of, I guess, size the group down a little bit, you know, more stuff will happen, or maybe you're just noticing it more. But I mean, we've been in places too where it's a total cat and mouse game, and it seems like they're actually kind of showing off for us being there.
Yeah, I think especially when you go to a place that a lot of people haven't been, right, that it's not the place everybody's been to. I think that's very much true. I have to tell you, and this is probably not a great thing to say, but I went to Waverly Hills Sanatorium for the first time in 2017, and I went there because that's the town my mama grew up in, so I went to scatter her ashes, and I thought, you know what, while I'm there, I just should go do this, right? Because, interestingly enough, I saw a documentary that my friends the Booth Brothers made about Waverly Hills, and like five of the people in the documentary had my mom's last name, and I was like, oh, I kind of feel like drawn to this place. So I went, and look, it's a great place. The owners have set it up great. They make it so you can go see a lot of things, do a lot of things. But going in there as a psychic, I felt a lot of the spirits were like, ugh, I'm hiding from all these people. Because it's a lot of people, right? There's like
hundreds of people, and they're running around with their flashlights and their electrical devices, and they're stomping around, screaming at ghosts, and wandering around, bumping into each other in the dark. And I think a lot of spirits are like, this isn't really fun for us. Whereas I think if there's a family in a home where no one knows it's haunted, that's like a spirit's playground, right? I mean, that's a place where, so I would like to go back to Waverly, maybe with less people, and kind of wander around and feel the place when there's not so many people there. Because I've stayed at the Queen Mary, which is every bit as trampled, but what went on inside my room was terrifying. So I think you just have to get to an isolated place sometimes for them to come out. Do you find that, Katie?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, like I said, I think it really depends on, you know, the place and, you know, who's there. I mean, you know, the whole ghosts are people too. It's just, you know, whatever personality
right.
they had and while they were alive, kind of going to determine what you're dealing with, you know, in the afterlife.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's
that's
one type of haunting too. So when you're talking about an intelligent, it's the spirit of a person who's gone away, who's stuck around. But there's also like all the other things, you know, there's the things that we dive into with quantum, you know, theory, being able to see other times that are happening in concession, or residual
mm-hmm.
stuff, or is, you know,
yes.
there's all different types of haunting. And I really think that, like, for example, the residual stuff, I think that's the stuff that's going to go away if people are constantly trampling on it, because we always fashion it to a record, you know, it's kind of our age, you know, but a vinyl record. There's music on it, right? And if you put the needle on the record, you're going to hear the music. But if you play that album over and over and over again, it's going to start to wear. It's going to start to skip to the point where you can't hear anything anymore. So, you know, I think those are the types of things. You have to kind of look at the situation and what it is
yeah.
to figure out what best suits the way to investigate it.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. So for you all, what is sort of your signature way to investigate that you think maybe is a little bit different than what you've seen other folks do?
One thing that we do is we like to assess the situation on our own. We don't like to hear the history. We don't like to hear, you know, all of the haunted stories and what the ghost names they think they are. We don't want to be, you know, jaded going into an investigation already having a preconceived notion of what might be there. We like to go in just fresh, and not that we're psychic per se, but just kind of feel the environment and get certain evidence and kind of get those feelings and look around and see almost like a detective, kind of figure out what might be going on here and then go from there. You know, hypothesize based on what you find, experiment, see what your results are, and then rehypothesize again. So it's a scientific method, but a lot of people say that they're scientific, but they don't actually follow that method, which, you know, keeps an open mind.
No, I agree with you 100%. And I think that as a psychic, it's the same thing for me. It's not like on shows they always try to make it seem like we haven't told this psychic anything to try to prove to you that they're psychic. It's really not about that. It's about, if you go in and in your mind you're thinking of only contacting maybe the three different spirits that the owner of the hotel has told you about, you're not leaving your energy open to speak with everybody else. And there could be some great, amazing energy there to speak to that maybe isn't one of the famous ones that the hotel owner talks about all the time. Do you know what I mean? I mean, otherwise you just go every time looking for the same three spirits. And you have to know in a lot of these places, right? Hotels and comedy clubs and theaters and ships and museums, like there's a lot more than three spirits there. You kind of have to be open to whomever they are.
We've actually done an experiment one time where we went into a location and we told people a false story about what was going on there. We made up some horrible, horrific story, but that was completely not what was going on there. And when the investigators came in, they were finding the horrible things that we had said. Now, there's two schools of thought of that. Either they're just lying about it, you know, and that's what they wanted us to think that they're finding it, or if your energy is actually projecting this kind of stuff, you might be manifesting your own, you know, with what you feel or what you think is going on in the environment. So it kind of proves that point exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, or because all of us are a little psychic, right? You might actually be tapping into that story as you're telling it. So you think it's a lie, but you're actually telling a real story.
Right. Yeah. And
I mean, that
but
happens.
And it's in the brain. It's you know, sometimes, you know, paranormal, you have to kind of get through the mind games first before, you know, you really, you know, come to a conclusion as to what's going on. Because the mind not only will trick you, the mind can project itself on the environment and cause real things to happen. You know, poltergeists are the same thing. Those are caused by the physical behavior and mind state of people. And they physically manifest in the environment. So, yeah, there's all kinds of corners and nooks and crannies of the paranormal. We always try to kind of look at each one.
Now, do you think poltergeists are always the reflection of human energy, or do you think that sometimes it's a dance between some kind of being and a human, like a disturbed human, a kid in turmoil and puberty, or, you know, somebody who's hasn't worked through their issues, or somebody who's physically ill, emotionally ill, mentally ill, somehow they tap into some energy that's in the house, and it kind of is a bizarre partnership. Sometimes I think that. I believe sometimes poltergeists are people, but sometimes I think, you know what, there's a little something messing with everybody in this house, and it's fooling you all into thinking it's the girl in puberty.
I think it goes both ways. Like you said, the dance, you know, they're feeding off each other probably is what I would believe that a poltergeist is. I don't think it's all based on what that person's emotion on. They're making everything up themselves. I think they're having a little help from somebody or something.
Yeah.
That's either in the house or in the area or maybe following them or whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of everything. Plus, it's all theory. I don't know for sure, but you know,
right.
You would think
sure.
That would be the case.
Be
not, it's not just a person making that happen. Cause that'd be that's crazy paranormal itself for me to physically make chair stack on themselves. You know, that's
right.
That's,
right.
Know, supernatural
and I think it,
stuff
I think it
right
is
there.
People who have tapped into a primal part of them, a telekinetic part of them that probably all of us have, and we don't know how to tap into. But I also think that a lot of times, I mean, even when folks are mentally ill or folks have mood changes or, you know, I had a guest on one of my shows a couple of weeks ago telling a story about how he got involved in some bad stuff and was misusing drugs that were originally done for spiritual journeys, but they was doing them way too much. And then suddenly he got this idea that he had to kill himself, and it was like a voice kept telling him to kill himself. Now, could that have come from him? Sure, but I think more often than not, sometimes there's a little ride-along there kind of going, hey, you know what? Why don't you kill yourself? Why don't you kill yourself? What a great idea. Why don't you kill yourself? I think that we sometimes don't, and I say that only because I think it's important, especially if we're in paranormal situations or we are doing journeys that involve psychedelics or whatever the story is, we be prepared that these little hitchhikers are out there and you kind of got to be careful. Katie, what do you think about that?
I mean, I definitely think you're right. It just, you know, you have to just be mindful going into this stuff because, you know, I mean, the whole nature of this field is you don't know what you're dealing with. Like, we have so many unanswered questions, and it's just really about staying alert. And I mean, the same way that you deal with people, you know, you kind of got to take charge of the situation and just always have boundaries around you and just, you know, make sure that when you're in situations that you don't really know, you know, what's around you, that you're just keeping that up.
Yeah, absolutely. Katie, where are you based? I know the boys are in Dallas. Where are you?
I'm actually in Orange County.
Oh, so am I. We're probably sitting right next to each other right now. We don't even know.
We're falling neighbors,
and,
right?
And Sheena, we're actually in San Antonio. We're about 4 hours south of Dallas.
You're in San Antonio. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Somehow I thought you guys were in Dallas Metro. I don't know why. But
never.
We're up there
all the time anyway. I mean, Texas is Texas, so you know, we'll take that.
Yeah, but Texas is huge. When you were saying anywhere in Texas that's successful, I was thinking that Texas is huge. To say that,
Texans drive though.
You guys,
this is the thing. Like being a Texan in California, like I've noticed that I don't mind. You know, I'll drive like 6-7 hours to the Bay Area because it's just normal to me. Californians are a bit different.
Yeah, they're strange, aren't they, in that way? I think it's very – I mean, I don't understand – always complaining about the commuting. Oh, my – because I live back and forth. I have a place in Orange County and a place in L.A. County, and I go back and forth. People are like, how do you do that drive? And I'm thinking,
I know.
You get in the car, you turn on the radio, the air conditioning, you talk to friends on the phone. An hour later, you're there. Is that the biggest inconvenience of your life? I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. You're
people
either sitting in traffic for an hour and a half or you're driving an hour and a half. I mean, either way.
Exactly. So are you Orange County coastal or Orange County inland?
I'm in Irvine. So I'm not quite coastal,
okay.
But I'm not quite, I guess inland.
Right. You're not in Brea. So let me tell you about Orange County coastal. Haunted. This is one of the most haunted places, and I forget how haunted it is when I go back to L.A., and then I come back here, and I'm like, oh, my God, why isn't everybody talking about how haunted it is here? I remember when I was a kid, my mom was also a psychic and didn't talk about it when I was in high school, not till I was in college. I remember kids would come over for high school for, like, pool parties and stuff, and suddenly they'd be whispering to my mom about some big secret she wasn't allowed to tell me. And years later, I would say, what was that about? Every time it was, oh, their house is haunted. And I think there is something about being around this much water and the fact that a lot of coastal Orange County is actually below sea level, and a lot of it in the day was a giant Indian burial ground. It's there's a lot of haunted stuff here. I have cleansed and blessed a lot of houses in this area. Something to check out because it is super, super, super haunted. And, I mean, I think everywhere has haunted stuff, but there's something about the water, right? And maybe Texas, too, because I didn't realize until I started going to Dallas how many lakes there are. Texas is so full of lakes, and that must up the paranormal activity. I mean, how haunted is it where you are, Barry?
Well, San Antonio is, probably one of the oldest cities in Texas, and dating back, what, 1600, late 1600s is...
They consider San Antonio one of the most haunted cities in the United States.
Wow!
Simply because with all the Alamo and all the Native American wars and just all the stuff that has happened in this general area. But kind of going back to your water thing, if you look at where a lot of the around the country, the Midwest around the Great Lakes, lots and lots of haunted things.
Yeah,
the Northeast, Boston, like the New England area, all water. New Orleans, all down in that area, a lot of water.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we've kind of done the water experiment and have shown, obviously water will conduct electricity. Probably in salt water actually conducts 10 times the amount of electricity, so it ramps up the energy that's already there. So, we definitely think it has a correlation.
Absolutely. And the Great Lakes, I lived on Lake Michigan for a while as a kid. And, man, they're creepy. I mean, I've been on the Atlantic and the Pacific in the middle of the night, so I know how creepy an ocean can be in the middle of the night. But there is something about the Great Lakes. I mean, I understand why the Native Americans felt that each one sort of was a spirit that had a spirit of an energy of its own, like a living being. There's something about looking out over that lake. My dad was an amateur boat builder when I was a kid. He was a design engineer, so his pet project at home was he built sailboats. And so I've been, in all the ocean, both the oceans with them and Lake Michigan. And I got to tell you, Lake Michigan, you have an overcast day, and it's like you think you're in the seventh level of hell on that lake. Like there is some spooky stuff happening there. And so I think you're right. All the Chicago, right, super haunted, right on Lake Michigan. I mean, so many of these cities right on the Great Lakes. And New Orleans, right, like Orange County Coastal, is below sea level. So, of course, it literally is the water. And a lot of places people might not know that are below sea level, including, my beloved home here, they're actually on sand. They're literally built sort of on the sand. you know, your house is really in the ocean. It's just in a very shallow part of the ocean. So it's yeah, water is an amazing conduit, and it's an amazing thing to follow if you're looking into the paranormal. Brad, what is sort of your, what are you guys really into right now? Like, what is the kind of haunting, the kind of place that you're very interested in investigating, maybe even a kind of place that y'all haven't been that much?
Well, one thing that we've been, we did when we were on Ghost Lab quite a bit. We did, obviously, before we had a television show, we just kind of, we kind of strengthened the theory with the show, is our Aracuse theory, which is, a lot of people will say Aracuse is reenactment, and it's much more than that. It is, you know, there are things that happen in the world, in the environment, that have a higher impact than others on the environment. Wars, battles, murders, even the happy stuff, like concerts and, you know, just our happy things. They have a high impact on a small area, and we think that is, if you can match that energy. If time is a continuum and the frequencies are constantly surrounding the universe, if you can somehow match the frequency of the time you're looking for, you can look into that time, and that time can look into you, and you cross, and you can see each other and hear each other interact. So a lot of things that we're doing right now is we're really trying to ramp up on, you know, some of these Aracuse theories and doing experiments where we find these areas of high concentration of an event that happened a very short time, and seeing if we can, you know, further prove this theory by getting evidence that relates to the time that we're looking for. So that's kind of what's up our sleeve in a nutshell right now.
That's awesome. And what were some of the different reenactments like that you did when you were doing the Ghost Lab show? Because you guys did some great ones.
Oh, my God.
Several of them, yeah. Did a lot of them.
The best one.
Very first episode we did one.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a happy one. That was where the Louisiana Hayride happened, where Elvis and a lot of the – Elvis got his start, and a lot of, like, real famous country singers got their start, the Louisiana Hayride show. And we went there and actually put on a concert on stage to try to get the energy level to where it was back in the 50s. That was kind of minor, man. The best one I think we did so far, and we talk about it to this day, is Deadwood.
Deadwood. That's got to be hands down my favorite episode. And what's weird, ironically, is our last episode of Ghost Lab we ever did. So we finished on a good note. But, you know, Wild Bill Hickok, the poker scene, the poker game, that filming it was, like, surreal. But watching it, it's like a movie. I mean, it's just like, I can't believe it came off like, and that was one take. There was no breaks. There was no nothing. That was one continuous take of that experiment. And we got, you know, of course, Wild Bill telling his wife that he loved her as his last words. And it was like, man, and it was like, he doesn't get no better than that. I'm sorry.
I still get goosebumps watching that episode. And I was there even, you know, 10, 11, 12 years later. It's amazing.
Yeah, I agree. God, was it that long ago? Wow, how old am I? I didn't even know that I met you guys that long ago. Isn't that amazing? It seems like yesterday. I like
11
the,
years
John,
ago.
The Abraham Lincoln. I like the Abraham Lincoln John Wilkes Booth reenactment. That's my favorite from Ghost Lab.
Oh yeah, that was a little bit different because we, you know, it was rumored that John Wilkes Booth had an alias and lived in Texas under the name John St. Helens. And we put on a theater show because we thought that, you know, he always liked the theater and he was kind of a ham and he would always come out. So that was the deal. Let's put on a show in the theater where he was supposed to have been a Shakespearean, you know, theater coach back in the day when he was under an alias to see if he comes out. Sure as hell, we get a voice that says, yes, I'm John Wilkes Booth. I mean, you go into these things thinking, you know, it wouldn't be great if we actually found it, but we're thinking long shot, right? And then something like that happens, and we're always blown away.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's funny, right, when you think about Booth being an actor, because we talk now about how crazy the world has gotten. Times are crazy. Things are crazy. I'm thinking, well, you know what, 150 years ago, an actor killed the president. I mean, that's weird. So So I think humanity's always been weird.
And people don't realize that John Wilkes Booth was a famous actor of the day. It's not like he was just some stage actor.
Celebrity.
He was like a Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
He was like a Brad Pitt of the day.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, he was a celebrity. Uh-huh. Yeah. But that's another one of those places, right? The energy and how that changed the world, the way that people mourned when Lincoln died. It's like the way that, you know, our parents talk about mourning when Kennedy died. They literally put Lincoln on the train and sent him around the country, and people lined the streets looking for. I mean, that's something that changed the world, right? The whole energy of his presidency, the Civil War, the battles. I mean, that whole thing is like a paranormal playground, because I think that shifted the energy forever in this country.
It did. It was 5 years of just constant turmoil and change and emotion in this country. And, you know, with Lincoln, he supposedly pawned the White House, seen by Winston Churchill and reported by Winston Churchill. The ghost train that he was on is seen. You know, there's a lot about where he's buried in Springfield. It's like Lincoln's ghost is in a lot of places.
Yeah. Well, Lincoln himself, right, very psychic, saw his own death, was very bogged down empathically by the deaths of the Civil War. Like, he was such a super empath, and he literally was feeling everyone dying. I mean, that alone, right? It's like the psychic president dies and becomes the psychic president's ghost. I mean, that whole era, I think, is a residual haunting that's not going away anytime soon, you know?
Yeah, and I saw a movie one time where he was actually a vampire slayer. Didn't know that.
Yeah.
You learn a lot.
Zombie Hunter. Have you seen that movie? He's also a zombie hunter.
Oh no, I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, he's also a zombie hunter. I think that's a lower budget tale, but that is out there as well. Yeah, yeah. The Vampire Slayer is one. Wouldn't that be great if that was it? That just makes him all the more badass.
Actually,
I've been kind of a.
And it was funny, because if you think it was really a good movie. I mean, it had a really cool kind of spin on the Civil War and things like that. I was surprised. It was a decent movie. I kind of liked it.
Yeah, I think it's, and who knows, maybe that's the truth. There are things we will never know, more things in heaven and earth, right?
Right.
Where, you guys, if I remember the story right from when I met you, Brad and Barry, You actually had your first paranormal experiences at Gettysburg, right?
Yeah,
it was actually,
and it was
Brad had that.
It was me. Barry was in the Navy at the time, down in Miami, and it was 30. Barry reminded me it was 31 years ago. This summer is when that happened, and
wow,
you know, to see something walking across the field. You know, you're not a ghost hunter back. You're not expecting anything like that to happen, especially in the middle of the day, and to see it, to film it, to see these things disappear right in front of you, and to instantly be just say, you know what, I now know the paranormal is real. There's nothing that you can say, do, or show me, or try to convince me otherwise. But it happened naturally, so that's where I think that it's not mystical, and it's, there's a natural component to it, and that's what, you know, kind of sparked the way we do things now, and that happened 31 years ago.
You know, I agree. I went there with my parents. I believe I was maybe 9, and my mother at the time, right, psychic in the closet, so we never talked about it. There was just a weird thing Mom could do, and I, you know, literally from birth was a fanatical Abraham Lincoln fanatic. I still am. And I bet, you know, so when other kids wanted to go to, like, Legoland and the water park, I wanted to go to Gettysburg, and I wanted to see where Lincoln died and where's the blood on the pillow, and very morbid small child. And my mom was really good about taking me. So we're standing there in Gettysburg, and they're doing one of those, the reenactments of the battle. And all of a sudden, on the other side of the reenactment, there's this kind of see-through other reenactment happening. And I saw it, and my mom saw it, and she was like, okay, we can go now. And that was the end of Gettysburg. So, yeah, I mean, it's. I think a lot of people see it. I don't think it's, I think the impression of it is so visceral that you don't even have to see it with your mind's eye. You can literally see it with your eyes.
You can, and you know, we could talk an entire show about Gettysburg experiences with you, Sheena.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many that have happened over the years.
Katie, have you been to Gettysburg?
Yeah, her phone call's been dropping off. She's been having to call back in.
Because she's in haunted Orange County. That's why.
Yeah.
She's in the haunted Orange County.
I'll answer for her. Yes, she was there with us when we filmed her episode in Ghost Lab. She was in Gettysburg. And Brad and I are going back there in about a month. We'll be there at another event in a town near Gettysburg.
Yeah, that whole area, right, where all the battles are. A couple of years, well, actually the same time that I went to Louisville to scatter my mom's ashes when I was saying I went to Waverly, I was in the South doing a paranormal documentary, so we drove from Louisville to Memphis, so down through Nashville, out to Memphis, and yes, did stop at Lincoln's birthplace, in case anybody is wondering, at my insistence, even though it's 2 hours off the way. There's that long stretch between Nashville and Memphis where there's almost nothing. And as you're coming into civilization again, you pass through Shiloh. And I tell you, just driving through that town, which is not that big, you know, it has like Motel 6 and it has a White Castle and gas station. I mean, it's like a regular place with a bunch of stuff off the freeway for lodgers. But, man, you can feel the energy of that battle still. And it is visceral. Same thing when I went to Fort Sumner. I mean, all of these places, you can really, really feel the energy. Battlefields are, I think, some of the strongest energy broadcasting places.
Mm-hmm. And naturally so. You know, you would expect that, and it does happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, when we talk about happy memories, right? Living in Los Angeles for most of my life. Hollywood, right? The hotels, the comedy clubs, the theaters, all of them so haunted because everybody wants to go back to where their best memories were.
Right. And the struggling actors and actresses in the town, and it's like there's a lot of emotion. It's the emotion when you make it, the emotion when you fail, the emotion, you know, Hollywood is the city of dreams, right? And those dreams literally implant themselves on the environment, just like the bad stuff on a battlefield. So it's all
Absolutely.
About energy. You know, everything that we deal with is all about energy, one form or another. That's what it's all about.
Absolutely. 100% true and completely all about energy. Yeah. So, Katie, let me ask you, welcome back.
Hey, I hope you guys can hear me.
I'm surprised my call that dropped because Orange County. when spirits cross over, I'm gonna get spiritual on you, so bear with me. When spirits cross over, do you think that they're done and they've crossed, or do you think they can still come back? So if a spirit is, let's say, in the Comedy Store, is that spirit stuck there, or has that spirit crossed over but chooses to come back and hang out there because of pleasant memories?
I don't think that they're stuck there. I mean, that's kind of one thing that I know, you know, we all believe, and spirits don't really get stuck in a place. They can choose to be there, you know, and even in places like prison, you think, why would somebody come in here and, you know, want to spend the afterlife here? But if that was a home to them, if that was something that just became their reality and, you know, the people there were a family to them, then it could still very much be a choice.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think that when people are visited by spirits, a lot of my clients will say, you know, I think my mom visited me. Is she stuck here? And I always say, no, she crossed over right away, but she wants to come back and spend time with her family, see how y'all are doing, and then go back. And that's perfectly okay. I'm not a big fan of this idea of you have to march into a location and force everyone to cross over. I think that's human ego. I don't think those spirits ask to be crossed over. I don't think you should just assume that you can do it and then get disappointed when they come back. You're just going to look like a fool when they come back because they might cross over for you just as a joke, and then 5 minutes later they're back. So this whole idea
that
we have to go in and save spirits. Uh-huh.
I don't like that either. I know that's another thing that, you know, we kind of as a team don't really believe in, but I don't like that for the simple fact that the whole nature of what we're doing is to figure out what's even going on. There's so many things we don't understand about the afterlife. So who are we to say, oh, you need to follow this, you know, this very human-minded pattern. Like, you have to cross over. You have to, you know, if we don't understand what's going on, why are we trying to force this on the spiritual realm?
Exactly. Right. We barely understand what's happening. Right.
And I want to see the how-to manual on how exactly you do that too. So because I haven't seen it in any Barnes and Nobles that I've been into.
You know, I think everybody wants to be the medium character from Poltergeist, and everybody thinks a lot of psychics. I think it's very dramatic. You walk into a place where people are upset, and you come in and you wave your hand around and you announce this house is clean, and then you storm. That's all very dramatic, but it doesn't really work like that because, right, the best, right? But it doesn't really work like that because a lot of times you tell spirits to cross over and they tell you where you can stick your crossing over. And again, that's that whole thing that we do where we act like we're so much more smart and more evolved than spirits. And the truth is they've been around a long time. They've been there a long time. We have a lot to learn from them. And I just think overall we need to be way more respectful of them. Where do you, Barry, where do you guys stand on respect to spirits?
Well, funny you should ask that. We posted. I'm gonna just. This is kind of a long answer, but we just posted something on our Facebook, and we asked the question if Ghost Lab was to come back, what would you change? And there were several comments that said, "Oh, you got to quit yelling at the spirit. You got to quit yelling. You got to quit yelling. You got to quit yelling. If quit being disrespectful, quit over and over again." Well, for one, we really didn't yell. When you saw the yelling, air quotes right now, on Ghost Lab, that's through editing. We really very rarely did that, actually, in real time. It seems like that's kind of what they wanted to portray on the show a little more, so that's why you saw it on the shows. The other thing is actually, there's a reason why I say we raise our voice yelling. You know, Brad and I do a lecture where we talk about kind of like getting our voices across the veil. You know, like we always refer it to, like, say you're looking for a lost child in the woods, and you're like, you're not going, "Hey, Jimmy, can you hear me?" You're not whispering. You're like, "Jimmy,
right?
Where are you at?" You're yelling. Okay, you're
right.
Trying to increase your odds, increase your chances of Jimmy hearing you. The same thing is what we do when we yell. We have loud voices anyways. We're trying to get that vocal, that vibration to go where this entity is for them to respond back. Who says that they might be yelling it back, and by the time it gets to you, it's a soft whisper on your EVP. Or it's a discernible voice where you're like, "What did they say?" You know, it's like garbled because by the time it gets to you, it's nothing. And so, but on TV and in the moment, you know, when we're in a prison, we're not, you know, being all happy and we're talking to a child molester. We have to, you know, kind of make the action fit the environment. And we're not yelling at grandma to cook the damn cookies. You burnt my damn chocolate chip cookies. it's all part of the moment, you know, where we're at.
Yeah.
But the yelling, when I would not say yelling, it's the raising of our voices. It's what we do. And I'll tell you what, I don't give a damn what anybody says about it. It freaking works. It works.
All the time
it works. And so if it works, that's what we're at. We're after evidence. We're after stuff. We want stuff. And in order to get the stuff, we got to do what we got to do.
Like, the times that I've investigated kind of on my own away from the cling, like, it's insane the amount of evidence and the quality of evidence that I get with them versus just on my own or with other people. And, like, having that contact, you know, I stand by the method, like, through and through. And, in fact, you know, when I've done kind of events away from the Kings. Like, I sing their praises all the time. And I'm like, you know, if Brad and Perry were here, like, we'd be getting insane evidence because it's true, you know, like, they both have this incredible energy that they bring into, you know, investigations. And, I mean, that just fuels it even more. But also, the loudness really does, it works. It works every single time.
And it could be just not the loudness of the response. It could be the loudness of our voices shaking the walls and getting the residual stuff that might be stored within the environment as well. So it's multifaceted. And my kids, the way I'm talking right now is actually talking soft. I mean, you ask my kids, and they see what I'm doing on Ghost Lab. That's basically how I talk in the house. So it's so different. But, yeah, people will watch that and say, he's being disrespectful of the spirit. Whatever.
Right. But don't you
we know
agree?
What we're doing.
And I agree with you. I agree with you. My mom yelled at the drive-thru. I don't know why my mom never raised her voice, but as soon as she got to the drive-thru, it was like, I'd like a Big Mac. I don't know what that was about. And she certainly wasn't trying to cross over the kids that worked there. But there are situations, right, with investigators where it gets incredibly disrespectful. And it's not like you're talking to John Wilkes Booth or a prisoner who kind of deserves what you're saying to them. It's like every situation. It's very demeaning and scolding and taunting. And I just think that sometimes removing some of the negativity from it all is a better way to get the spirits to come out. Some spirits, negative spirits, respond to the negativity. But I think to go into every location and tell everything you're going to kick its ass just sort of makes, you know, you seem like someone should kick yours. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's like Ghost Live says, you know, that's kind of what they portrayed when they did the editing. But in reality, maybe 1 out of 10 investigations we go on, we might do a little, raise our voices a little more. But it's just a technique, it's a tool that we use. We're not using it. And if we do it, it's only for 3, 4, 5 minutes. But it's funny, we'll go to events.
Yeah.
We'll go to events and like we'll have like a crowd, say 30, 40 people, and they're all staring at us going, all right, do your thing. Let's hear the yelling. It's like this sideshow, like, you know, that's all we do.
Yeah.
They want us to get riled up and they just get this huge kick out of it, but it's not how we operate all the time. We use it when we use it. And like you said, we get results.